Welcome in, ladies and gentlemen, to MBR, or as we like to call it around here, Nothing But Rants, the show where I find topics that I'm oddly passionate about, and I pontificate upon them. These are not hot takes, but rather takes that I'm hot about.
Let's shut up and grab some tape.
Tweet, we're live. What is up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome in to the Film Guy Network on a fabulous Monday evening. Already with the giggles and the chuckles. What's going on?
There was so much emphasis on that F there.
I mean, dude, it is a fabulous Monday evening. And I feel like, dude, a topic of discussion of ad nauseum we've been talking about for 3 years finally came to a head. Does it done pop? That's the way I feel. I don't know how you guys feel, but that's the way I feel about House vs. NCAA. And it popped on a Saturday where I had to sit on my hands and let the takes culminate for 48 hours before I could delightfully come to this here microphone and spew some hot takes about this House vs. NCAA nonsense. Feel that way?
No, I am.
I feel pent up. I feel like I got pent up aggressive takes.
That's fine. You've never said fabulous like that before. Fabulous.
Fabulous. Careful. Why are you saying it that way?
Careful, you're going to peak the mic.
Oh, no. Hey, we done. That's all I'm really doing. I'm really just testing audio to make sure we actually made the right corrections. I think we do. Normally by this time, the chat doesn't let us know. Turn up the mics. Turn up the mics. We got them turned up. It's going to be a good day. We got a loaded one for you. House versus NCAA has indeed finally reached a settlement, and we have another edition of Brooks Reads, so you don't have to. It's anonymous coach quote season, and we got a plethora of them. I'm talking about a litany. I'm talking about any, synonyms you got for a lot. I got a lot of anonymous quotes I want to bring you guys tonight. Oregon sustains a major injury. Our first real major injury of the offseason since Tennessee dropped a corner, I believe, if my memory serves me correct. One worth talking about here on the show. Pac-12 making a comeback, or at least trying to?
It's back.
All I know is that we suck at counting.
It's the WAC-12, I think is what I'm going to call this one for right now. Maybe the Midwest version of the WAC-12. We're going to get to it tonight. It's trying to make a comeback, and I think I got some tidbits on that one for you as well. We got a big year three coaches theory going around on this network. Hey, by year three, you either are or you aren't as a college football coach. We got some coaches entering that culmination of year three. Hey, let's go ahead and mute the notifications, big dog. Let's go ahead and mute the noties. That's a fine. Okay, pull it out. I'm pulling it out of the contract.
Dang, you couldn't even make it 2 weeks into the month.
2 cent fine. a cent a ding.
Damn.
What do these fines go to?
Yeah, charity.
Oh, okay.
She's a real nice lady. Lives right up the street. Needs some help.
That's the ultimate dad joke right there.
College Football Hall of Fame and much, much more on tonight's show. Make sure you go ahead and hit that thumbs up button. Like, subscribe, rate, review, all that good stuff. If it's your first time watching tonight, you're going to have a good time, okay? If you're very confused about this House versus NCAA stuff, what's going on in the world of college football, I'm going to make it dummy-proof for you tonight because Lord knows I had to absorb it myself. Let's go ahead and start there, boys. It was the big news of the weekend. Let's talk about it. House versus NCAA has been settled. I feel like I first brought this to the attention of our audience, I want to say, in about January of 2023. Does that sound about right?
Feels right. I feel like that's when the first inklings of it were first dropped.
I know for a fact it's been a main topic of discussion on this network since you two have gotten microphones.
Yes.
So we've at least been talking about it since August of 2023. I think our audience, based off the conversation and the literal discourse I've seen in our Discord, our audience, I feel like, is really, really educated on what is going on with this settlement, why it was important, when it was coming down, what it ultimately was going to lead to, and the fallout or the repercussions of this settlement are exactly what we kind of forecasted it was ultimately going to be, right? A $2.8 billion settlement that will be allotted to players that played college football from 2016 until now. Okay, that does not include the 20.5 annual rev share that we're going to talk about here in a second. That's the settlement for players previously. Now, my question is, I play some D2 ball for 2 years, 16, 17. You think I get some bread? Probably not. Maybe.
You might even get some eligibility.
2.6 billion, they got some money to throw around. There's probably going to be some people that don't file the right amount, right paperwork to get their bread, which means maybe I get some of mine. I doubt it, though.
What do you think? What would you be happy with if you
I don't know if they pay me a dollar to win, I get seven of them hoes. We didn't win a lot of football.
$7.
Buddy, we did not
win. In this economy?
Oh, yeah. In this economy, I can't even buy a McDonald's meal.
No.
They're garbage. Garbage.
You get about 2 gallons of gas.
Maybe. Oh, kill that sucker. You got him. You got him. My hand. Nah, he's yours, dude. He's yours right now. Oh! Did you?
Oh, he's right there.
Did he?
You got him.
He did. That a boy.
Impressive. Yeah,
that a boy. That's good stuff right there. Anyways, back to this. $2.8 billion being paid out to previous college football players. Here's the important groundwork for what's moving forward in college football. $20.5 million annual salary cap for the 2025 and 2026 calendar year, okay? That will inevitably increase year over year over the next decade per the reporting that I read today. The majority of college football programs that are major college football competitors, okay? They have already, most of them, come out on record saying they're going to spend about 16 of that 20 on football in and of itself. Now, that's the salary cap, okay? That's the amount of revenue sharing dollars you are allowed to allot to your student athletes on an annual basis. $20.5 million is free play. You can go out and pay for play any athlete you want with that $20.5 million. It's free. You can go do whatever you want with the school. You obviously have to take it out of your athletic budget, but you're able to do with that whatever you want. Now, the next question that comes off of that is, that's the salary cap. What about this NIL stuff that we've been going on with for years and years prior? What about these collectives? What about these massive amounts of dollars that have been pooled together and have been thus satisfying the pay-for-play need for these athletes over the last 3 or 4 years? Well, from now on, that's going to have to pass through something called NIL Go. Okay, what is NIL Go? That's that company Deloitte we've been telling you about for a long, long time. Okay, any deal north of $600, any amount of income registered to a student athlete north of $600 will have to go through NIL Go, and this company will ultimately deem whether or not that deal is quote unquote passable. Okay, NIL deals moving forward are going to have to be quote real. You're going to have to go to events. You're going to have to actually make marketable dollars. Okay. From my understanding, guys, when NIL was first rumored in like 2018, 2019, this was supposed to go through some type of clearinghouse. Mm-hmm. There was supposed to be, hey, you can't just give Jimmy a bunch of money because he goes to your school. Jimmy's going to actually have to do something for that marketing dollars, for those marketable monies. It's name, image, and likeness, not I committed to Texas A&M, I committed to Georgia, give me my money. That's not how this is going to work moving forward. Any tangible dollars are going to have to go through NIL Go, which is basically the Deloitte company. Also, and I know we're going to open up for questions, hold them for just a second, because I know there's a bunch of them. Also, there's been a CEO named out of all of this. Everybody's been talking about college football needs a commissioner. Well, they just got one, but they really didn't get one. We're calling him the head fed around here. That's his entire job title based off what they released today. His name is Brian Seely. He used to work for Major League Baseball. He is Tony Petitti's buddy. Okay, Tony Petitti, the CEO, or the commissioner of the Big Ten. My man Seely, from the exact release today, quote, this is his job title. His job is to build out the organization's investigative and enforcement teams and oversee all of its ongoing operations and stakeholder relationships. Seely and his team will also be responsible for enforcement of the new rules around revenue sharing, student athlete, third-party name, image, likeness, deals, and roster limits. In other words, my man Brian Seely, head fed. This is the man who's going to come up after you if you break these rules they just put into place.
I mean, it's a fun nickname, but that literally describes exactly
that's what he is. He's the head fed.
He's the head fed of this.
And that's why I'm glad they put it in terms, because we laughed on this network for years. All you goofies saying you want to be the commissioner of college. No, you don't. No, you don't. They're going to cook you and fry you as a fan base. Your likable image, it doesn't exist. It won't exist. You're there to hold people accountable for breaking rules. Everybody loves to support the blue until they get a speeding ticket. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. This is the guy whose job is to sign the speeding tickets and throw your ass in jail when you overexceed the limits and the rules. Ain't nobody going to like this guy.
No.
No. Knew it all along. Nobody likes to be told what they can't do.
Hell no. And I'm glad, like I said, they came out and said, this man's the head fed. If y'all going to hate anybody, hate this guy, he's the one that's going to slap your program with a bunch of lawsuits. All right? So there's that. So in short, Let me culminize everything that just happened, okay? We got a head fed named Brian Seely, whose job is to hold college sports programs to a $20.5 million salary cap with legitimate means of NIL additives, okay? And the salary cap will inevitably increase year over year, as most salary caps do, okay? Now, that being said, there's a shitload of questions, I would imagine.
A whole lot. Mm-hmm.
So let's start lobbing them, and let's see if we can get them figured out.
All right. Let's start with the biggest one, probably. Is this finally going to provide sanity to this sport?
So here's what I love most about this. Even if I don't necessarily love that the head fed is best friends with Tony Petitti, I like that at least we got somebody. Mm-hmm. At least we have a governing body attempting to do right and wrong, attempting to govern right and wrong, attempting to put some type of lanes and guardrails on the sport, and implementing some type of salary cap. At least now there are rules that you have to attempt to circumvent. Whether or not you can circumvent them, I haven't come to figure out, right? I don't know yet if this is going to be bulletproof. We'll talk about that a little bit more here in a second. But at least now we got somebody. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Right.
We're not just wild, wild west in this thing knowing that the NCAA can't do shit because Tennessee keeps teabagging them in open court.
Yeah, I don't know if it's going to provide sanity per se, like immediately fix everything, but it's certainly a step in the right direction to where back in the olden days of the NCAA, it was kind of just, they were basically diminished to this powerless being because they were, like you said, sued into oblivion. So it's definitely a step in the right direction. And also, I don't know if college football has ever been sane.
Yeah.
Like the ways that recruiting was done, the way throughout the entire history of the sport, the two centuries, has always been insane. Like there's always been some level of insanity to the sport, which kind of makes it so great. I'm just glad there is, like you said, a step in the right direction.
Yeah, I think at the very least, the thought process of everybody is put under like somewhat of a level playing field, or at least the fact that you can't exceed past this X amount of dollars. The fact that there is some type of dollar sign next to everybody and it coincides with everybody, I think that's what at least provides some type of sanity of knowing, oh, okay, like every school has this threshold, no matter who it is, and you can't go past this threshold.
I think my next question to that would be is, who's a winner in this situation? What teams are stamped today? Okay, we have this model coming, CEO. They're winners.
You skipped the question.
I thought we talked about the CEO.
No. What do we think about the CEO? We talked about him. What do we think about him?
My bad.
What do you think about my man, head fed Brian Seely?
I mean, like him as an individual, what is he really going to do? Like, I feel like he's just a face that's plastered on this because it's not going to be Seely sitting in a dungeon all day long, like siphoning through all of these NIL deals and making sure, like, calling up people saying, hey, that's a big no-no. You can't do that. All right. Like, he's really just the face of all of this, in my opinion. So what I think of him, I think it's great that we have a face of this.
All right, so I got like I think Bill Simmons would call this a half-baked take. This one's been sitting in the oven for a little bit. It's rising a little bit. It's not quite ready, but I'm going to deliver it on you anyways.
Let's hear it.
I'm sure he's more than qualified, Mr. Seely, Mr. Head Fed. I'm sure he's great at what he did with Major League Baseball. It sounds like this guy was like the head investigator for Major League Baseball, to which, I mean, not to make a joke, but the biggest investigation in the history of Major League Baseball was actually completed by the internet, and that was with the Houston Astros. So their investigative team must not have been that great. John Boy has a career because they're not that great at it. So just not to shit on Buddy. Sure, he's great at what he does. Sure, he's more than qualified. However, this is coming from Mr. SEC Homer, by the way, so buckle up. This is Tony Petitti's best friend. This dude worked with Tony Petitti in Major League Baseball. So, to just summarize everything that has gone on over the last 12 months of college, let's go 24 months of college football. The Big Ten has secured the biggest TV rights contract in the sport by a considerable margin, about $15 million per year per school. They have the biggest conference in the sport. They've won the last two national titles, okay? And Your commissioner, Greg Sankey's been standing up taking every PR loss known to man over the last 12 months. Everybody hates him right now with when he stands up in front of a microphone. And Tony Petitti's ducking all of that. And his best friend's now the decision maker in the sport. SEC's little bro. SEC is little bro right now in this sport.
Ooh.
You got to take the most shots at the guy with the most sustainable armor.
See, I'm not like trying to hold any water for the SEC here because I don't care about it as a conference. But that isn't definitely an interesting take. Historically, recently, it sort of appears that way. But at the same time, I feel like I don't know how much of a backseat the SEC is going to take because of this.
Now, when I heard this news today, I told you straight up, going to 9, Bubba. Like, you're going to 9 conference games. Whatever debate you got, whatever power you think you got, if there is a, hey, who's going to make the decision? Let's let the CEO make the decision. He probably going to lean in favor of the Big Ten.
Most likely.
I mean, if indeed the ties are as close as I think they are, which, again, he ain't Greg Sankey's former colleague. He's Tony Petitti's former colleague. So, just a thought.
I mean, what I think a good hypothetical would be, though, is if they do go to 9 games, would the SEC just not look at their 3 or 4 contenders annually and say, okay, we're going to give them the cakewalks this year? Georgia, Texas, Alabama, okay, you guys get Vanderbilt, you guys get Mississippi State, any other team that's been traditional, Kentucky. This is your SEC slate now.
Yeah.
In response to that, I don't know. But
it's just interesting. I'm just watching. I don't believe it, by the way. I still think the SEC is way deeper. I just got into a huge argument with a former Oregon player that's in the NFL, my man George Whitaker. We just got a knockdown drag out on his podcast about how the SEC is way deeper and way better and way more competitive top to bottom than the Big Ten. I totally, solely believe that. However, the decision-making power is tilted. It is officially tilted slightly in their favor.
Yeah.
So the half-baked take is your little bro. The reality is they got an upper hand. Even if it's a small one, they've got a small upper hand.
For sure.
So there's that. You asked a question about who wins.
Yeah, who's the winner?
Who wins in this? I personally think anybody that didn't start a culture of selling the soul and overplaying payers. Or overpaying players.
Yeah.
Overplaying payers. Overpaying players. Anybody that wasn't out here wilding is going to be fine. So immediate names that pop into my head, Clemson. Clemson's a huge winner out of this.
Clemson's a poster child of this.
Clemson's a huge winner out of this. I think Georgia. I think Ohio State has not had to go crazy. I think they've been fine. I think Texas inevitably will be fine because they started winning. Had Texas not won over the last 3 years, I think they'd be in some, not trouble, but I think they'd have to start it from not scratch, but like do it without being able to overpay for athletes, which is hard to do.
That's true. I think Texas is probably the best beneficiary of the, quote, NIL era. But that can also coincide with the fact that you hired Steve Sarkisian and things got a lot better for you once he's got his program fully rolling. So I don't know if the success is directly tied to NIL. It certainly hasn't hurt them.
I wonder if any of you guys are going to hit the macro take here. Who do you got as a big winner?
Would you classify Penn State as a winner here?
I don't know because they just took private equity money, which we're going to get into in a second. I don't know. I don't know if Penn State's got enough FU money to where this is okay. $21 million hit. Fuck it, we can take that. I don't know if that's one of those programs.
I mean, maybe Tennessee is a winner out of this because they escaped out of paying Nico even more money, and then this would have came down the path.
The easiest answer here is the fans.
Oh,
well, actually happens, if we can actually govern this sport. I think it helps the fans more than anything. I think we return to some sanity in this sport.
How's it? But what ways does it help the fans, though, other than just...
Just general retention. I think this will help offer general retention of your roster as well. I don't think you're going to be able to just say, oh, I'm a Pitt wide receiver. My name's Jordan Addison. Oh, USC can now all of a sudden pay me triple, so I'm going to go over there. I don't think that's going to be able to happen.
So
anymore.
You think fatigue is going to decrease in that
regard?
Yeah, we keep losing these players.
And donor fatigue. Like, that's a real thing. Mm-hmm. Like, the idea that there are wealthy people in the southeastern states that are constantly getting called by their favorite football team for more and more money. Now, they might continue because the money might – the responsibility for, like, for example, stadium renovations might go back on, graduates and fans now. Mm-hmm. But it's not going to be funneling money so we can get the new Jimmy, So there's that. Who loses?
I have a take on this.
Okay.
I don't know if there's necessarily a massive loser in this because you look at, like, the teams that were traditionally big spending and just going way over the limits that we agree on – and how they're probably not going to be able to do that anymore. But it's not like they benefited from this majorly. I mean, Tennessee is a team we talked about how obviously the Nico story is iconic at this point. it wasn't like Nico Iamaleava was a massive payoff for them. It wasn't like Tennessee won national championships and won SEC championships based on this model. Same for USC and Miami. Like, they went out and got a lot and paid a lot for these recruits. It's not like their on-field product got any better. So yeah, the idea that they're not going to be able to pay these recruits, it's not like things are going to change that drastically for them. There's other only, than the way they acquire talent.
There's only two contracts that we know of right now in the sport that I think are now – that now, if they are real, and if you actually put them through Deloitte, and if you actually put them through the revenue sharing model, and if they are what they say they are, you are at risk or have way too much money allotted to a player who's not going to impact your team enough. Two examples. One's obviously Mark Bowman.
Yeah.
Yes.
If you're giving a tight end $8 million, you're screwed.
Absolutely.
There is no way. Okay, your salary cap is going to be all tilted towards a position that is not impactful enough. And honestly, if you're giving Bryce Underwood $10 million over the next 3 years, he better be a Heisman winner.
Mm-hmm.
He better Big be a facts. Heisman winner, because the rest of your roster is not going to be good enough. However, I would imagine Bryce Underwood's money, a lot of that's coming from Oracle.
Yeah.
A lot of that's coming from Barstool. I don't know the situation with Mark Bowman.
Yeah, but and again, that's kind of my point. It's not like Mark Bowman elevates USC to a national championship contender. Like, we even talked about how this could be a contract done to USC's detriment. Like, you're overpaying so much to where it might hurt your roster elsewhere. So it's not like you could look at it inadvertently. USC's helped by this. They're a winner because they've now people forcing them to stop overpaying ridiculous prices for talent.
Well, they won't get the talent. That's the theory now, because yes, they're only getting it because they're overpaying. I mean, but we don't even have to look at – I mean, USC's an obvious example of this. I think for USC – you just get as much front-loaded as you possibly can, promise as much as you possibly can, and then hope that by year two, when these rules are actually implemented, which we're going to get into in a second, that Mark Bowman can actually market himself to a $3 million annual salary, right, that he's currently prorated at, and we can get most of that off of the salary cap and most of it into real NIL money that can go through NIL Go, and Deloitte approves. That's the plan. But that's wishing in one hand and shitting in the other one. Tell me which one fills up first. You know what I mean? So there's that situation. But we don't even have to do it with USC. There have been reports that say Texas has a $40 million roster.
Mm-hmm.
If that's true, they're going to have to go find $20 million of money that can go through NIL Go to hold up their roster.
Right.
Or else kids are going to be looking around saying, hey, buddy, I came here because you told me I could make X and you're paying me W. We better find this here Delta, or I'm going to get the fuck out of here.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that was going to be my point is, doesn't this kind of give a school like Oregon almost a major advantage, or potentially give them a major advantage?
I think this gives schools advantages that have legitimate marketable companies.
Yeah.
Legitimate companies. So you can't tell me that Deloitte's going to go tell Phil Knight that a tight end that he's doing commercials with ain't worth $700,000 a year. For that matter, I don't think, and this is, leads us into our next question about does NIL Go and does Deloitte actually have power? There is no way on God's green earth I think some company is going to go tell Barstool and Dave Portnoy that the quarterback's not worth $1.5 million to do three podcasts a year. It's his money. If he thinks the kid's worth it, the kid's worth it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, but we sell merch. You know what I mean? Like, they'll justify it however they want to justify it.
Yeah.
So what I do think this removes is the idea that we've got 70 collective boosters that make $750,000 a year, and we're pulling $8,000 a month from all of them because they love the Dogs, or they love the Aggies, or they love the Longhorns, and we're just going to pool all that money together and then divvy it out to our athletes. That is removed. However, if Zaxby's wants to give JT Daniels $300,000, then go ahead. Maybe he can sell you some chicken fingers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that, like, to answer your question, the next question is, will Deloitte actually have power? To answer your question, I don't know.
Yeah.
And no, none of these coaches know either. I get two types of coaches. I get one coach that says, how are you going to tell me what somebody's worth? How are you going to tell me what I can do with my money, whether or not that's market value? Who gives a shit? I'm paying it. If I overpay, you can't tell me whatever. And then I have another coach that says, oh, you just wait. Deloitte's going to just absolutely slap the shit out of the first team that violates this so hard that everyone's going to throw up their hands and go, ain't no way I'm doing it.
Yeah.
Ain't no way I'm doing it.
I think that the one way that this is going to be enforced, and it's similar to how it was done in the NCAA, you can't tell people how much you can pay them. Obviously, you know, if X company wants to pay a player this amount, you can't stop them from doing so. I think what happens is you enforce it on the player. It goes back to the NCAA suspending players for receiving payments for signing jerseys and things like that. The guys that sold the merchandise and paid the players to do so never got punished, but it was the players that received these funds that were outside of the rules to which they could do is where the punishments come in. So I don't think that you're going to have Deloitte telling people what they can and can't pay, but you're definitely going to have Deloitte saying to the players, you can and can't accept this money.
And like for the audience's knowledge alone, like what Deloitte is apparently have is like a 20-year sample size of marketing deals signed by athletes. So if you bring in there a deal that says, hey, I'm making $170,000 from the local car dealership, and they look down and say, well, you know, A-Rod only got $110,000 back in 2018 at the local New York dealership, so no, you can't make that much.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I don't know how that doesn't get thrown into court. I don't know how that player doesn't look at them and say, how are you able to tell me what I'm worth?
Because I'm sure that there's going to be contracts in this to when you sign with
when
these
teams. When you sign
teams
to
and you
play college
you
football,
are agreeing
you
that,
are agreeing that yeah. they have power over you. They yeah. have a governing power
Correct.
Over you.
I think
would hope so.
That's got to be what these new signing days are going to entail, yeah. where you basically get signed from this, and this is the amount that, okay, you are agreeing that Deloitte, whatever powers that be, can have control over what's a fair market value for you as a player or you as a representative for your name, image, and likeness. You get name, image, and likeness payments now, but there is a cap to it, so we don't have these companies just blowing up money out the ass to get you $5 million necessarily.
So there's an elephant in the room. Let's point at it. If Deloitte and NIL Go actually have power,
mm-hmm.
we know where we're going back, right?
Where's that?
Dropping.
Oh, Mr. Bagman.
Oh, they're back, baby.
Mr. Bagman's. Oh,
Mr. Manziel.
His stocks.
A lot of football players are going to be opening laundromats.
Ain't no doubt. We got to get some cash dropped mm-hmm. off. Y'all better figure out how you're going to launder that money, though. That's tough. 200 thou wow in cash ain't easy to clean.
No.
We'll be buying a lot of vehicles. You know, they don't take cash payments for houses, do they? You can't just walk in and say, hey, here's $100,000 in a duffel. Here's my down payment for this house. It has to go through a wire transfer, correct?
I'm pretty sure, yeah. I've never tried it.
The houses that I have purchased, wire transfers. Maybe there's some cash folks out there, but I don't believe so.
I've never tried. But yeah, no, I mean, that's going to...
We're going right back to
it. But yeah, that's fine. Like, no one was... There were complaints.
That's fine.
Like, oh, look.
Cheating.
They're always going to cheat. You're never going to stop cheating in this sport. There were complaints about how recruiting was ran 20 plus years ago, 25 years ago, and how, oh, certain teams cheating. They bought that player so-and-so. But at least there was an understood uniformity of, okay, at least there's this rule that everyone has to follow on the baseline. And there were some other teams with, you know, McDonald's bags or 20,000 in a duffel bag on a visit.
And back in the day, when there actually was a governing body that felt like they had some type of power, because prior to NIL, the NCAA could actually sanction people.
Yeah.
Really, pre-COVID, they could go out and slap people with trouble. Obviously, Tennessee knows this to be the case. But back in the day, they self-reported way better than they obviously can't self-report now because no one can go get them. But college football coaches tend to govern themselves. It's almost like the Autobahn. You know?
Well, I mean, it's because I think they lived in an era of the NCAA, and like Mark Richt even made a joke about this, Todd Gurley, where basically like Mark Richt found out eventually that, oh, the NCAA doesn't have as much power as we thought, but coaches lived in such fear. It was like, okay, if I don't report this, they're going to come for me and the entire program as a whole. So I have to sacrifice this one player and get him suspended, or I'm going to get, quote, the death penalty.
Yeah, see, I don't think Mark ran in the circles that some of the corner cutters ran in. You know what I mean?
I agree.
Like the Mark Richt coaching tree wasn't out here McDonald's bagging.
No.
You know what I mean? There mm-hmm. was one specific coaching tree that knew how to do the bag game really, really well
mm-hmm.
to the tune of like, I think, 7 titles.
Yeah.
And then everybody else around him figured that method out as well. And then NIL came around. But now that we're going back to that bag method, some of them old recruiting hounds are probably going to get back to the top. Yeah.
And I think that revolves in the big circle of college football of there was never parity. There was never going to be parity. There was always haves and have-nots, even with this. And people thought the NIL was going to be the evening of the field, and, oh, now these lesser schools can pay players to get there. That was never going to happen.
Yeah.
There's always going to be haves and have-nots of college football. the Browns, the Jets, teams are always going to – there are some things that are never going to change in the sport of football, and teams getting richer is one of them.
My question – I think the most important question for a lot of schools is, like, do you have to basically now have to pick a sport to compete in? Like, the days of you being able to be national championship contenders at multiple sports – out the window.
I think schools kind of already do that, though. Like, they kind
explain. Well, I guess Auburn's down in football right now, but up in basketball. But they're spending money on recruiting in football.
Mm-hmm.
So one's got to give. You know what I mean?
I think it does become interesting how you have these quote everything schools. Like, Tennessee's a great example of this. Tennessee is going to have more of a strain on providing for their football team simply because their baseball team wins and their basketball team wins.
Yeah.
Like, if you're Georgia, you can look at your basketball team and go, hey, Mike, listen, just get to the tournament every year, make a deeper run in the SEC title, and you're good. Baseball, maybe do a little better. But, like, teams like that, they're going to allocate more to the football team that is actually going to be producing. It's going to be very interesting to see how teams measure out what they pay for and what they don't. And, like, I think you're right. I think you do have to kind of choose what you're going to put all your chips in on.
At least, like, If I give you less revenue sharing model, I have to work to get you more marketable deals that pass through NIL Go to get to the number that is required to win. That's simple math. So I do think the talent gap in football is not going to – we're not going to change. But I think the haves in college basketball, the Syracuses of the world, not to an extent North Carolina, because Belichick's there now, and part of his contract is that he was going to get 16 or 14 of the $20 million. So they're – about to be worse at basketball than they already currently are.
Mm-hmm.
But like a Duke, you think Manny Diaz is getting what the other ACC schools are getting on this 20.5?
Probably not.
Yeah.
But that would make Duke far better than like an Auburn,
mm-hmm.
right? You would think they'd have much more to play with than an Auburn.
Yeah, I mean, it's,
even though Auburn's been way better at basketball over the last several years than Duke.
So it plays into the conversation that we got into about how we kind of revert back to what we knew. Like, you could revert back to what you knew of basketball, where Kansas, Duke, North Carolina, well, North Carolina maybe right now, they did just hire Bill Belichick, so we'll see about that one. But like your typical basketball schools that
Michigan
you envision,
State.
Yeah, like those schools, like they were the ones that were always good at basketball. It might return to that, but the bigger point is what happens to some of these other basketball programs to where you still may not even be able to compete with these schools because they're allocated more money than you are now.
I mean, I guess we'll find out real quick if some of these guys are taking other jobs, you know?
I mean,
if Bruce Pearl's leaving Tennessee, if Rick Barnes up there at Tennessee, if he dips out, we know.
Mm-hmm.
We know why.
Yeah.
And I just don't know where they're going to go. You know, there's only so many of those basketball jobs.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the old adages of the rich get richer. To where, you know, we're going to see the teams that have traditionally been basketball schools that might not as well be known for football. Like, Kentucky's going to get much better at basketball, you'd have to believe.
Found you guys years ago and wasn't a fan. Now I'm here as a certified ball knower and giving back. Drew Aller's overrated and go dogs. Kevin Waltman going onto the board. Yeah, we're very parasitic in that form, you know? Like, people, sometimes you walk up on us like, ugh, I don't like those guys. And then the third or fourth time, you're like, whoa.
Huh.
This it reminds me of that, like a great white shark has that animal that swims up underneath him. And I would imagine that first time that guy popped up, that great white shark was like, God, this guy's annoying. And then you realize, hold on, he's serving a purpose. This guy's cleaning up all the takes. This guy's making everything make sense.
Is that your new spirit animal?
No, still the buffalo. Okay. Let's go add Kevin Waltman to the board.
Let's go.
But do you think you have to pick sports basically to compete in?
I would think so. I would imagine. I mean, you have to pick something that gets more than the other, right?
I feel like the answer to that is yes, but it's also not going to put that much more of a strain. It just constricts the budget in areas. Teams were having to do this anyways. They didn't have unlimited money. They weren't just printing money to spend on, okay, yeah, we can spend this on basketball, we can spend this on baseball, and we can spend whatever we want on football. Like, you had to balance a budget. Again, it's just that your bottom line is now changed to where this is the amount that you can use. So I don't think it's necessarily going to change things that much for programs, as much as we think at least.
And speaking of change, most of the people that I've talked to thinks this will go most into effect in the 2027 recruiting cycle. Okay, so Most of the 2026 deals have been front-loaded, and I think they're going to get grandfathered in, if you will. I think it's the terminology that most people are using. So I think most of this will impact player acquisition strategies in 2027, not necessarily this class. So that really just points to teams like USC. I think USC is going to hold on to what they got going on. Now, how they hold on to it the second year those kids are on campus, don't ask me. Okay, that's a question for Lincoln Riley.
And you would think, though, that the agents of those players would be smart enough, though, to have those conversations, right?
Yeah, just preparing them. Like, hey, you're either going to have to work really, really hard to market yourself year two, or we're going to have to go somewhere else.
Okay, yeah. I just hope that that's what's happening.
Yeah.
I would hope, at least. Or at least the school is being honest about it, too.
Ah, you're funny. You think used car salesmen are honest about the Carfax?
I can blindly hope about
that's
it.
A crime. You can't do that. You can't forge Carfax.
You know. I know you've seen Tires. Of all people on this stage right now, you've seen the Netflix series Tires.
Right.
Would you put it past a used car salesman to maybe skirt the rules just a tad?
Oh, yeah. They're definitely skirting the rules. Not some of our Carfax. That's a crime.
Also, should be noted, there's like 17 teams, it's probably climbed even higher, that have already announced they're taking private equity money. Mm. And to put this in layman's terms, it seems to me that the almost $21 million that are going to has to come out to be competitive in athletics is now going to have to be replaced by a private equity firm loan in order to continue building and repairing facilities.
Oh, boy.
It looked to me in the reporting that I saw that people are taking money from private equity firms in order to continue their stadium renovations, continue the construction on campus, continue all of this stuff. In exchange, the private equity firms are then going to market those buildings. So you're going to start seeing logos on fields. You're going to start seeing stadium names being sold. You're going to start seeing more than just Pitbull by FIU Stadium. You're going to see a lot of this moving forward.
Yeah. You're going to have athletic directors calling up Dave Ramsey, huh? I have a $30 million loan, Dave. How do I get rid of this?
Dave, this private equity fund out of Texas is on my ass right now.
How do I save the UCLA Bruins, Dave? Tell me.
Dave, the books have been read for 150 years. How do I turn them green? That's the craziest thing to me. Look, I don't claim to be a brilliant person. But I do have a master's in business, and for the life of me, I can't figure out why a private equity firm would look around the landscape of the economic stature of this world and be like, where is our greatest opportunity for a return on investment? I got it! College sports! Those athletic departments are crushing! They constantly turn in the green, right? Wrong. No. Black. Years in the black. I don't understand this.
Black is profit.
In the red, excuse me. In the red. Don't understand this. For the life of me, can't get it.
I mean, they know something we don't, I'll tell you that.
The Dave jokes classic.
I'm laughing at the Auburn going to be rocking Yellowwood color rush jerseys.
Dave, I have $20.5 million a year to play with, really only about 16. I gave 4 of it to a freshman tight end. What do I do?
Dave, what do you think about Mark Bowman? How much would you invest in this?
Well, sir, do you have any expensive vehicles? Not really, but I do have a tight end that hasn't stepped foot on the field quite yet.
Sell it. Might be a first-round pick.
Sell it. Pay off the debt.
What's the ROI? Nothing, really.
We don't know yet. He might get 800 yards. The most I've ever had at tight end is Mark Andrews.
Damn, it is, isn't it?
Oh, man.
Maybe we should call Dave Ramsey and ask him that. We need to attend Financial Peace University.
Dave Ramsey up for the next GM of
plan
the
out
Ohio
my
State
2027
Buckeyes?
Recruiting class.
Maybe. It's anonymous coach speak season, boys.
Honestly, one of my favorite seasons of the year.
You think so?
I like
it. Is?
These takes are so mid.
I think that I'm just going to – I think we should start up anonymous college football analyst says.
Yeah.
And we should just start giving out – you can't say my name, but, like, I don't know, just hellacious claims.
I like
you
that.
Can't say my name, but anonymous SEC coach says Washington State have better weapons than Oklahoma. That's way better of a take than what we're about to go after. Right
Texas Tech just spent $25 million. to win 4 football games.
Anonymous college football coach says SMU is a top-tier ACC program.
I would agree with that.
That's a good take.
It's a good take. It's not a bad one.
Stuck his neck out there, huh?
Yeah.
I mean,
it's only like 5 respectable programs in the conference. That's a bold national perspective.
That's a bold statement to make, considering they just made a playoff.
Guys. Let's put this in a holistic view. This was a Group of 5 team that joined a Power 4 conference and went to the conference championship in 1 year, made the playoff, did all of that. Yeah, it's wild. If I had told you 3 years ago that SMU would become a top-tier ACC program within the first 2 seasons, you would call me crazy. I don't think that's that wild of a take, and it's also not like, that was such a layup take. Now, like, Miami is still one of these teams.
Of all of the industries, oil companies don't really have marketing faces, right?
Mm-hmm. No.
You know what I mean? So, like, your oil money, if your recruiting strategies are tied up in really rich oil tycoons just giving you hundreds of thousands of dollars every quarter, that's probably going to take a hit with this Deloitte stuff. However, Dallas and Fort Worth have major, major real estate companies. They have major tech companies. They have major real companies that can actually market these kids. So I think SMU, of all the ACC schools, apart maybe even including Miami, I think their NIL strategies took a massive hit this week with this rule. Because I'm not going to speak for SMU like I'm some all-knower of SMU Mustangs football. But I guarantee you a lot of that money that they've been throwing at kids to increase their roster and make their roster better is probably from rich oil tycoons. Am I wrong for saying that?
No.
There's a portion of it probably. Texas Tech, same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what's Texas Tech going to do, by the way? Their whole entire athletic program is built off the fact that they had a former football player strike oil, literally, is worth $2.3 billion and has FU money, I'm going to make the Red Raiders great.
Mm-hmm.
You ain't going to be able to pay a softball pitcher $1.2 million moving forward?
Crazy.
What is Texas Tech going to do, right? What are some of these oil-based income companies or programs going to do? That would be my only question about SMU moving forward. But I'm with this guy. They are a premier ACC program.
I would just make an assumption that if you are worth $2.3 billion, you have investments in businesses, I would assume. Like, you don't just have it just sitting around. If you're smart with it, it's like you have some type of business that is
Jonathan,
tied to your
he
name.
He had the business and sold it for $2.3 billion.
Yeah, but do you think he's still just, like, it's nowhere? Like, that money is just sitting around?
Okay, yeah. I mean, then he can do what? Open a local franchise
or
restaurant.
That, yeah.
Say, all right,
you're
he's
right.
going to come do commercials here.
Right.
Now that's where it's going to be.
Which I assume is what would happen.
If the local steakhouse can actually fund an entire roster worth $20 million in NIL money,
yeah.
Which is what they got going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They have been in ESPN telling everybody, we just spent $12 million on the transfer portal alone. Not our roster. The 18 people we brought in, we just gave $12 million. So if that all passes through RevShare, more than half of their roster money is tied up in 18 players.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if that strategy is going to keep working. You're right.
Yeah.
He's going to have to.
Oh, they're definitely
not. He ain't just going to be able to open up a local steakhouse.
Yeah.
He's going to have to open up real businesses to really launder this money to these players if he really cares about Texas Tech football that much.
Yeah,
it's not just going to be able to be like, oh, here's my money, take it.
I mean, the process in which they do it's definitely going to change, but I don't feel like I don't think Texas Tech's hands are tied here necessarily. They just have to find new avenues to cheat, which, again, teams have been doing this for centuries, since the sport was invented.
Texas Tech, when they solved the Deloitte problem, quote, I want you to put the word out there, we back up. Were they ever up?
No.
They're ascending right
now. They're back up to bowl eligibility.
Roster value-wise. We have a super chub we need to put on the board over there. This comes from our man, GeorgiaFan224. I've been watching you for years and had the privilege of meeting you once at the local Publix. I've watched many of platforms covering college football, and I can stand on business that yours is truly the best. Ain't no doubt. We do it better than anybody else.
Publix guy, huh?
Local Publix got to step up, though.
Well, so the Kroger, a good 20-minute poke from here.
Mm, yeah.
So if you're going to do anything convenient-wise, it's Publix. But if I'm doing main grocery shopping, which Mr. Mom here does all the grocery shopping around the house, if I'm doing grocery shopping, I'm going to Kroger.
I love how you do the Kroger. I'm going to the Kroger.
I'm going to the Kroger.
The Krogers? Do you throw in an S every now and then?
No, I'm going to the Kroger.
Going
The Kroger.
Yeah, I'm going to the Kroger.
To the Kroger.
I don't say the Kroger. I'm going to the Kroger.
Okay. I'm just going to Kroger.
Yeah, Kroger is the destination.
You know what I respect most about Publix? I respect the hell out of the fact that I've never grabbed a bad cart at Publix. Never a cart with a busted wheel. Never a cart with a wobbly wheel. Now, what I don't love about Publix, except for my local Publix, no cart returns. You got to walk that bitch all the way back at most Publix. Not mine. We got cart return.
I have cart
return. Yeah, Primo over at my Publix. What were we doing? What's my man's name? Georgia Fanatic 224.
What was the Super Chubb's name?
Georgia Fan. Let me find this. I can only see the first half of it right now. Georgia Fan 224.
Hell yeah. You think 224 is an area code? Let's do some deductive reasoning here. What do we think?
I'm not going to try to guess what this man's username is for.
Thanks for the money. Let's find out where you live.
And send us your zip code.
Anonymous Coach Speak Season. Anonymous Coach says there is a tremendous amount of pressure on Cade Klubnik to carry Clemson. Agree or disagree?
Agreed.
Yes.
Their running back room is shot to hell. Now, they have a lot of receiver weapons. Like, I feel like this is the most weapons they've had since that 2019 year. But as far as it goes, like, Cade Klubnik is going to be what makes this offense churn. There's no Phil Maffa. There's no Will Shipley to hand the ball off to. They have guys. I mean, they talked about moving that wide receiver back there, and it worked in the game against Texas. But Cade Klubnik is going to be the reason this offense succeeds or fails this year.
To an extent. I mean, I do like their wide receiver weapons, I, at least for what Clemson – like, they return a lot what they had last year, and I thought for what they needed, they produce relatively well. So, I think there obviously is pressure on Cade Klubnik, but I feel it's more individual than it is for, like, he has to carry the entire team.
Cade Klubnik lofted individual expectations by himself by saying, quote, "I've been studying a lot of Joe Burrow tape." Now – he tried to soften the blow while also saying he was studying Billy Zappi tape or Bailey Zappi tape, whatever buddy's name from Western Kentucky.
Bailey Zappi also was kind of a baller at Western Kentucky.
He kind of was, but I don't know if I would go from grinding 2019 LSU tape to turning Western Kentucky on. But hey, Bailey Zappi did ball that one time.
He was balling. I'll give him that.
But I disagree with the overall sentiment of the take because I think – at the end of the year, there is an opportunity that the face of Clemson football is that defensive line. I think the combination of Tamarian Parker, Peter Woods, my man 19, who I'm forgetting the name of, mountain of a man, Capehart, okay? I think that defensive line and that box in general, Sammy Brown, Jamal Anderson, I think that core of football players will be just as important to Clemson's success this year as anybody else on the roster. No different, by the way, than their national championship winning teams. I'm not saying they're going to.
Right, but
those national championship teams were led by Christian Wilkins. They were led by the defensive line.
Yeah, absolutely. But who was
having Trevor Lawrence.
Who's the face of those teams?
Trevor Lawrence. But the reason that they were as great as they were, apart from the one game that Trevor Lawrence and Justin Ross put together, was because of their defensive line.
I agree with that.
I think that's what might happen to them this year.
I guess never mind. That's not equivalent. I'll hold back on that.
I still think Peter Woods got to lose about 10 pounds. I'm just going to keep saying that. Please, man. You got like Derrick Brown potential.
Derrick Brown's a good player.
Derrick Brown's a great player. He was a way better college player than – he's a decent pro player.
Yeah, right? Decent.
Mm-hmm. Decent. Mm-hmm. Worth $100 million. Decent at D tackle. If you're great, you're worth $140 million.
Let's see.
Probably. Anonymous coach says Georgia
96 million.
Huh?
96 million right
Dang.
Now.
Dang. Pretty good.
It is pretty good.
Especially for a non-NFL ball knower. That's pretty on the head. Anonymous college football coach says Georgia Tech has future head coaches on staff.
This is one of the
head
more
coaches.
This is one of the more softball takes. Like, we've been talking about how Buster Faulkner is going to get a head coaching job.
We ain't been talking about Blake Gideon.
We haven't, but
yeah.
This one kind of caught me off guard. Blake Gideon wasn't on my radar. But then again, they rarely are until they are. You know what I mean? They're already on their way to be a head coach. But Blake Gideon's a guy who's the defensive coordinator at Georgia Tech, just hired in 2025, I saw. This is a guy who's like a safeties coach for Texas after being a GA. He started his GA track in 2014. So in 9 years, he went from a GA to a DC. He's 36 years old.
So these are both just fast climbers that they have on their staff. And it's like, yeah, these guys are obviously on the track to become head coaches. We knew about Buster Faulkner,
I think,
because that's been the successful side of the football. The Gideon one is more of a projection, I would say.
Yeah, I think it's kind of the Fran Brown route, where like everyone kind of knew Fran Brown when he was at Georgia had that sauce to him. And then when he went to Syracuse and succeeded, everyone, people at Georgia were like, we're not surprised.
So maybe Gideon has to go to one more stop as a DC?
Maybe, or in, like, I think Faulkner is going to go from an OC job to a Power 4 job.
Yeah.
I think Gideon might go from a DC job to a mid-major head coaching job.
That would make sense.
Right? Because, I mean, Faulkner's 43 years old. Gideon's 37, 36, 37.
Those are babies.
So slight, yeah, both babies in the coaching area, but like Gideon's got a mid-major track right now.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't know. I don't know, and this is a overall sentiment, overall topic. I don't know what jobs are going to be available. Like, I keep seeing, obviously, PJ Fleck's agents leaking that he wants to leave Minnesota. And obviously, Eli Drinkwitz was dragged, or name was linked to, I want to get out of Mizzou if I win 10 games. But I don't know where y'all going to go.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where y'all going to go. Now, if y'all leave, I know where Buster's going to go. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Yeah. If y'all leave, I know where some of these other guys are going to go. But, like, I don't know where Buster takes a job tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
I even get into this. Like, if you were a Florida fan, let's say Billy Napier just burns and just it goes to hell. They fire him.
Mm-hmm.
Would that football program rather hire PJ Fleck or Buster Faulkner?
Buster Faulkner.
Buster Faulkner.
Really?
I would think so.
But, I mean, like, predicting the NFL and college football coaching market – at this time of year,
impossible.
So hard.
Yeah, I don't think any of us would have said no SEC coach is going to get fired
exactly
this last year.
Exactly.
Do you think that changes, though, now?
Well, yeah, the leashes are shorter on a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, leashes are shorter.
We've
because
grabbed
time has
one
passed.
Link down.
Yeah, because time has passed. But I'm saying because, like, we kind of hypothesized that maybe teams were waiting for House versus NCAA to settle. And then now that, which I know there's still not exact clarity on what is about to happen, but maybe this is like, okay, now we have something set in place.
Yeah, no, there's going to be a lot of firings this year. I would be shocked if the SEC doesn't fire three or more head coaches.
Three or more, okay.
Anonymous college football coach says Northwestern's comparison is Vanderbilt, except Vanderbilt actually spends and is serious about NIL.
So they're not Vanderbilt.
They're not Vanderbilt. Yeah. Northwestern is now worse than Vanderbilt per a Big Ten coach.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. Are we talking about 2024 Vanderbilt, or are we talking about baseline Vanderbilt?
I think that coach is talking about the idea that Northwestern ain't out here interested in giving nobody money.
You
might as well just get on.
I think this is helping me stumble into a new take. Is Mississippi State the new Vanderbilt of the SEC?
Ooh. Yeah.
Like,
and here's why. Like, even if, like, the rev share is there, but, like, you're far more marketable of an athlete in Nashville, Tennessee than you are in Starkville, Mississippi.
Correct.
Period. No offense to Starkville. Actually, full offense to Starkville. Never going back.
We're
going back this year.
Damn.
We just go skip out.
We're not going to that one.
Y'all.
Oh, all right.
I'll be fine with that.
But
just
no, let the hooligans loose.
I'll go, I guess.
But no, like
SID department, real nice to us. We'll go.
I'm just
But like what?
I was going to say, like, the Dan Mullen era did Mississippi State a ton of favors, and they were consistently a top 25 team. But since then, they've been bottom feeders, and now you see this kind of rise from Vanderbilt to where you see them on the schedule, and it's not like, oh, shit, we have to play them, but it's also not automatic W. Like, people treat Mississippi State like that, and they have for the last 3 years.
I would say
going
that
on four.
Mississippi State hasn't been that bad long enough for me to agree with this. Because, like, when they had Will Rogers, they weren't just a dumpster fire. I mean, they were – and this is, too, like, when it was divisions, and it's like you're competing against Alabama every single year.
Wasn't that our introduction to Brian Kelly? Here's 700 yards passing?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
KJ,
like,
Costello.
Yeah, here's
baby.
700 yards passing from Costello in Mississippi State.
Man.
L as the 14th ranked team in the country. L.
KJ Costello.
Oof.
But I think that Jeff Lebby can keep them progressing. So I don't think that they're just like dead in the water right
maybe
now.
Maybe they only lose to Toledo by one
score. Yeah, maybe they close the gap on Toledo a little bit.
Now, this was
your future college football playoff team, by the way.
This was Jonathan's favorite anonymous coach's take. Washington could be the most improved team in college football.
That one is like, okay, now we're getting
somewhere. We're getting to a take.
Now we're actually sitting down. We're being studious about our takes, and we're like, this is the one I cooked up. I can get on board with this one. I don't have any grounds to say why you're correct in this. Yeah, got a good head coach. Don't have Will Rogers as your quarterback anymore, which I think wasn't exactly a great plan for you. But, I mean, I think that this is like, okay, I could eventually see this happening.
Just hope they don't go belly up.
That'd be bad.
It's a fish joke.
I know. That's the second, like, colossal dad joke you've made tonight. Are you feeling all right, dude?
Yeah. It was a long weekend.
There's one more on there, I think.
Yeah, the Rutgers one? Yeah, this is a no-shit take. Rutgers is a case of the have-nots.
Rutgers
isn't
good at football.
Yeah, buddy, sky's blue.
Like, yeah.
Boobs are cool. Like, what are we doing? You know what I mean? Like, Jesus, bro.
What was the format there? Like, were they going down the list, or was the interview just like, hey, tell me something, you know, that you'd be fine with going out. It's going to be anonymous, obviously, about your fellow Big Ten team.
Hey, I got one. Rutgers sucks.
This is how I imagine this interview going. You'd be the coach in this scenario. All right. Describe these teams in five words or less. SMU, top-tier ACC program. Kate Klubnik has to carry Clemson. Georgia Tech, future head coaches on that staff. Like, that's how I imagine this going. Like, and we got a timer. We got 10 seconds to think, and that's it. That's what this reads like.
Most definitely.
My boy JS Web Music constantly giving us memberships. I appreciate that, man. That's like 7 or 8 shows out of the last 12. I feel like JS Web's popped in with free gifts. Thank you for the gifted JS Web.
Hell yeah, JS. Thank you.
I'm good on these. We good?
We've got 4 minutes. You want to talk about the Oregon news?
Yeah, let's talk about Evan Stewart. Likely out for the year. Depending on the severity of the injury. Now, I don't like patellar's either 6 weeks or six, like 9 months.
Yeah, I saw the range was like 2 to 12 months.
Yeah, it's a wide range just based off of how bad he tore it.
Mm-hmm.
So I would imagine they have a clear, you know, thought process on what this is. It was obviously a massive year for him. He had a big year in terms of need you to be great. This year they were going to depend on him a lot. I looked at the depth chart today, guys. This is rather concerning for Oregon. Even with Evan Stewart, this would have been a questionable group. Kyle Casper, Dakarian Moore is going to have to start for them as a true freshman. If he doesn't, Malik Benson. Y'all remember Malik Benson? Didn't work out at Alabama. Didn't work out at Florida State. Attempting to make it work at Oregon. And then their slot receiver is a guy by the name of Gary Bryant. Now, I don't know a ton about West Coast football, but those names aren't names that I know, and I study college football a whole hell of a lot more than the average, you know, person.
Right. Yeah, it kind of makes you think back to the Dallas Wilson commitment or recruitment where Oregon had him almost basically down to the wire and Florida came in and scooped him up, and now it looks like Dallas Wilson is going to be a contributing factor on a Florida roster that already has some big names at wide receiver. So not to do that thing where it sucks that you don't have him, but it did just kind of make my mind turn to that where, man, if they had Dallas Wilson, maybe – It certainly helps alleviate this.
I mean, guys, I stumbled on a take, it seems like multiple times today, but I was looking at this RLADS today, and I know what the schedule is. I understand the schedule and Dan Lanning and the roster. I know they should win 11 games. There's no doubt about that. But when I look at that roster is not championship caliber right now, not on paper. Now, I know we don't play these games on paper, but that roster is like an 8 or 9 range best roster in college football. There are far more rosters with far fewer holes than what Oregon's got going on right now, even if Evan Stewart were on the roster, I'm saying. Even if you were 100% healthy.
I mean,
they got a lot of questions.
You definitely don't feel fantastic about Oregon heading into the preseason, but like we just said, it's an 8 or 9 roster. That's a playoff team. The schedule is manageable. Should be a playoff team in there. So there's plenty of time you would have to imagine for Dan Lanning to figure things out. And we just saw a head coach take a roster that we all collectively agreed at this time last year was not a top 10 roster in Notre Dame. So it's possible.
Do you feel better about Oregon's situation right now or LSU going into this year?
Mm.
On paper. In a vacuum.
I think
which
I would,
team's got fewer holes?
Here's the weird. Here's what I'm going to do, and this might be a wishy-washy answer. Oregon has a better chance of making the playoff.
Yeah.
I think LSU has a better chance of making the national championship.
And that's what I'm asking, essentially.
I would agree with that.
If both teams were thrown into a playoff scenario tomorrow, who's got the goods to win it?
LSU.
LSU.
Right now.
All right, let's continue. South Carolina, Oregon. Push.
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 All right, let's continue. Penn State or Oregon?
Penn State.
Penn State right now.
Michigan or Oregon?
Oregon.
Oregon.
Okay, so there's the line in the Big Ten.
Mm-hmm.
BYU or Oregon?
Oregon. I'm going to go Oregon.
All right. So we put them about that 8 or 9 range?
No, I mean, I counted on my hands of teams that I would put up ahead of them, and it got to about 8 or 9.
Yeah. So they're just not as good on paper as even they were last year.
No. But again,
the rest of the sport isn't.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's one of those things where it's like it's alarming to watch out for, but at the same time, they should be a playoff team. They should be competitive at the Big 12. They've got a top 10 roster. And we saw last year, just get to the dance and whatever can happen.
We can delay your three coaches. We can't delay the Pac-12 news. The Pac-12 is apparently coming back.
It's back.
It's the Midwest. It's the MAC with Oregon State and Washington State.
Oh, we get Saturday night MAC-tion?
Yeah, it's the MAC with Oregon State and Washington State.
Talk dirty
to me. You don't seem
excited
about it.
Do you have the – well, I got news on this, or at least information on this. Do you have the actual list of teams? It's like Utah State. It's the Midwest. Or it's the MAC. It's the MAC in naming themselves the Pac-12.
Commonly
known as the WAC-12.
Boise State, Colorado State, Fresno State, San Diego State, Utah State, Oregon State, and Washington State. And Gonzaga will be on the basketball
side.
Yeah,
so Bubba, that's not a Power 4 football conference. That's not returning us to the Power 5.
Oh, no.
No. That's the Mid-Atlantic Conference calling themselves the Pac-12.
Ooh.
However, if Cal and Stanford come back in this bitch, we might be cooking with Crisco.
Ooh, so this is interesting. Are they going to fall? Even though the teams that are in that, we wouldn't classify that as a Power 5 conference. No. Are they going to fall under that umbrella though? Is it going to become now?
No, that's still the Power 4.
So in other words, what I see from that is those are the teams you're going to be picking for the playoff field every time.
Basically,
mm-hmm. Whoever
wins the PMAC, as we're going to call
Washington
it.
Washington State, you're now a front runner for a playoff spot perennially.
The PMAC 12.
Yeah.
The PMAC 12.
The PMAC 12 minus 4.
The PMAC 12, I think, is a PMAC 6 right now, PMAC 7.
Mm-hmm.
Looking for a PMAC 8 football team. I think they're going to turn to a PMAC 9 with the addition eventually of Cal and Stanford.
Good.
That's what my sources are telling
me.
Wink, wink.
I like
Watch out for the PMAC.
I am totally fine with that. And again, Pac-12 After Dark was
PMAC
special.
PMAC 12 After Dark.
PMAC 12 After Dark was special. Not if Stanford and Cal join. It still goes back to being more of the Pac-12.
No.
It's
the PMAC.
These late night
It would be
after
four original Pac-12 schools with 6 MAC teams. It would be the PMAC. I'm sorry. No Pac-12 can have Boise State in it. It just doesn't look right. The PMAC.
All I'm going to say is, growing up in college and going through those 4 years and getting to 1 a.m. and being like, oh, shit.
We still got ball.
There's another game starting, guys.
That still happens, dude. Road trips now, man.
Hell yeah.
You get a whole 3-hour football game on that last final stretch.
Mm.
That's what I'm talking about. Some action.
Mm.
Ah.
You know what I'm talking about? I'm talking about them dogs. I'm going to talk about them dogs for a whole hour coming up right now.